Hi, everyone. We'd like to welcome you to the Jerome Stern Distinguished Writers Series. Today we have poet D.A. Powell with us. And here to introduce our reader is Mari Carter. Please welcome her to the stage.
Hi, y'all. Thanks for coming out tonight. You couldn't have picked a better occasion. First of all, thanks to Keith and everyone who keeps this ship going, Whitney, Matt, for letting me have the great honor of introducing D.A. Powell tonight. All right, just gonna jump in. So the first time I heard D.A. Powell read as part of the Visiting Writers Series at Ole Miss in Oxford, I spent 10 minutes afterwards crying in tandem with a stranger outside of the ladies' room. After fixing my face, I went down to tell D.A. how much I enjoyed the reading, and he gave me what I consider to be one of the top five hugs I've ever received. It's also true that when applying for MFA programs and having recently watched an Oprah episode in which she talked about her success with vision boarding, I decided to make one myself. The first two things I pinned were an author photo of D.A. Powell, and E. E. Cummings' poem entitled Werelings and Windlings. A few months later, I got word that I was accepted here at Florida State, so I'd like to think that in some small way, I owe a lot to D.A. and, of course, Oprah. Coming back to D.A.'s work in the past few weeks and speaking with some of my friends about the impact that his poems have had on me, what I became more aware of that what was that my experience was not a singular one. D.A. Powell has, for so many, been an integral figure in their own lives and writing. So instead of me standing up here rattling off critical responses to his work, I thought it might be nice if I enlisted a few of those friends for whom encountering D.A.'s work served as a sort of watershed moment, whether it be in how they approach their poetry, the world, or themselves. Travis Blankenship, who first introduced me to Doug's work, had this to say. For me, Doug is my fascination. He has helped me believe this world is a marvel. His presence in my life has even been pragmatic. He taught me to arrange a bookshelf. First, there are his books. Then there are the books with his poems in them. Then there are books he gave me. The books he told me to read follow. And then everything else just goes on the shelf. Brandy Nicole Martin told me that every time I revisit Doug's work, I'm completely taken with the way they barrel and skip across the page. But what I love most about his work is his sense of authenticity. He's honest and compelling, and I feel his poems help readers understand the world around us. And finally, in talking with Jamie Ringlib, he explained to me how so many of Powell's poems exist in a kind of in-between space that acknowledges, for example, the mortality of love, and yet performs the effort of preserving it, or in a space that examines troubled memories and losses, and yet hopes to restore some of those things to the speaker absolutely. He said, "This is why I come to D.A. Powell's poetry, to remember and to learn better, that in the face of everything which is temporal and temporary, a poem can make a space that endures, that survives long enough to console us." And I think we're starting to see a pattern here. What D.A.'s poems often ask of us is that we examine how we are in the world, the ways in which we perform our identity for others and for ourselves, how we both construct and distort memory, and also how poetry can act as a vehicle for us to order the chaotic and ecstatic artifacts of our experience. Because a great poet isn't just one thing to one person, but many things to many people. Their influence stretches across multiple landscapes, both mental and physical, that the work can provide escape, instruction, and consolation. A few years ago, I came across a video of D.A. reading a letter that he had written for a project put on by The Rumpus entitled Letters in the Mail, a Celebration of Correspondence. In concluding the letter, Doug writes, "If you are reading this, it means the world to me. And I don't think you can read any of D.A. Powell's poems and doubt for a second that that's true. And so to that, I say this. Reading you has meant the world to me. And if I'm certain of anything, it's that I am not alone in saying so." D.A. Powell is the author of 5 collections, including Useless Landscape, or A Guide for Boys, which received the National Book Critics Circle Award in Poetry. His honors include the Kingsley Tufts Prize in Poetry and an Arts and Letters Award in Literature from the American Academy of Arts and Letters, as well as fellowships from the Guggenheim Foundation and the National Endowment for the Arts. He has taught at Harvard University, Columbia University, and the University of San Francisco. He has been awarded the Lyric Poetry Award from the Poetry Society of America, a grant from the National Endowments for the Arts, and a Paul Engle Fellowship from the James Michener Foundation. In 2014, Gray Wolf released Repast, Tea, Lunch, and Cocktails, a reissue of Powell's first 3 collections, and an introduction by novelist David Levitt. You can also buy that in the back. So please, join me in welcoming D.A. Powell to the Warehouse stage.
Thank you. I am always so thrilled and embarrassed to be here in a place where people write, because, you know, reading to writers is it's a little bit more demanding, because you guys have your own stuff going on in your heads, and you know when you hear bullshit. So I'm gonna try and stick to the non-bullshit, if that's possible. It's hard for me. And I'm going to begin with a poem that I wrote for the Occupy Wall Street movement. Seems ages ago now, doesn't it? Seems like we were kids then. Now we've got to be adults. And this poem exists in the public domain. It is not my property. You can take it, you can reproduce it, you can do whatever you want with it. You can rewrite it. But I didn't want it to belong to anyone. The Great Unrest. When I lie down, I think, how long before I get up? The night drags on and I toss and turn until dawn. Job 7:4. You'd think, bedraggled as I am by the illness of my age, I'd be able to lounge a little, that I'd shut out the noise as others do, and I would sigh and sleep. Let me eat Tootsie Pops, I'd think. Let me lay in the moonlight and grow the opposite of baby fat. Lie, I mean. Let me lie. I have had to wrestle with grammar all my life, and what people call ideals. I used to love ideals, but that wasn't cool. Plus, there was money to be had. And ass, scads of ass. Now I forget. The principle's your pal and not the principle. At least I've retained that. Give up your sleepless nights, the man on TV said, talking to me. Like, how did he know? I could have dozed through half a dozen shows and all the ads. Even commercial noise might have eventually been absorbed into my dreams. It might have become my dreams. But it's hard for me to lay still, while I am getting fucked. Sorry. It's late, and you've been at me all night, and I hadn't risen from it. I was tired. I'm even more tired. But now I'm up. Get up. This is called The Pleasures of the Dark. These are new poems, by the way, or what we call new poems when they haven't quite been out in the world. The Pleasures of the Dark. Fear not, for none of us are born wise. Some are born ghosts, divided at the threshold From an aching form we long to take in the brown brick archways, if we aren't turned away. Have you been licked by the flames of geraniums in boxes set along the edges of the streets? It does not burn. And if you admit me to your home, no, that's already too much. I couldn't haunt your lonely abode. Daylight and you'd see through me. Daylight and faith would cease, and one of us would ask awkwardly to be excused back into the famished thoroughfare from whence he first appeared. That's too much work. I'm already vanishing, and you see, nervous postulant, surely by now I thought you'd leave as well. But shadows increase in shadow, a creed grows out of need, and nobody wants to die alone in another man's bed when he can be taken right here on his knees. This poem, I think I wrote this two autumns ago in Iowa City. I was there teaching, as I sometimes do, thinking, why the hell am I here in Iowa City? I was living in an apartment, what they call a penthouse apartment in Iowa City. So, you know, it was like the fourth floor. And, right? And it was overlooking a parking garage. And then you caught just the corner, you know, if you really wanted a view, just a corner of the convenience store where the undergrads would go to buy their beer. And this is sort of a meditation on, you know, how I got there and how I wanted to get out. Not overlooking the come and go. Oh, the store is called The Come and Go, with a K. Not overlooking the come and go. Who needs a scary movie when there's scary life? Icy days pile up like empty pill bottles. One craves hot soup and bare sex. I can't hibernate above the come and go when there's smoky lights all night. It isn't easy making change for a 20 on a Tuesday night when they're filling the tanks beneath the pumps and the manager's on break. All underage kids must come here and go here. The world rhymes with itself. Earth is earth and row is row, whether to pull a set of oars and scull or a line of cornstalks completing the farmer's math. Up above the come and go, I'm reading Maya Angelou. And there's a head shop open 24 hours. They do not sell head, but you might think it the way the patrons come and go all night, all fall, all night, all fall. I lived behind a sex club called the Power Exchange. All words have been charged with electric bodies ever since I wandered into my first poem. It was surely the road not taken, or maybe the body electric, I'm easily mistaken. An older is reptilian in its body, lithe leaves at night, and such vocal things. It is a sexy tongue the world speaks, so many licks to get to the polished moon. Tell me a story then. How did you come to be trampled or new or high where the warblers land and recklessly shit where they eat? The universe I fear to be crashing. No painkillers for Doug. Ugh. It's just autumn come, electrical storms, the brave fire of the leaves and everything. The pawpaw, along with the huckleberry, chokecherry, cranberry, Concord grape, and persimmon, is one of the indigenous fruits. I usually only get it here, and only this time of year. Fear is real, especially that most unholy fear that we will be forgotten. Fruit, when it's rotten, opens a door to memory from other lives. Is it wrong to wish for another life? My hand can barely write the thought. My soul can barely see. My eye translate the fire into autumn's sweet flesh. Persimmons taste like semen. Pawpaw taste like flesh. Large hard seeds like date pits I spit off the balcony in summer into the parking lot below, where none are sure to be hit nor anything grow. A spider would not lower himself to touch such concrete ground. I would not live to see a tree grow to fruition, and yet each year I'd like to try. Well, Midwest, here am I, it's pumpkin time. The cicadas have stopped singing. It's just the crickets now along the river. But up above the come and go, it's wind and machinery. Why do they all take the same path, and why do these undergrads shout against the fall wind? The rebel angels' cries are but the check-in cries of birds. Hey, Mike! Hey, Mike! It must be hard to be Mike. Your name reduced in the ears of others to a syllable of grief. And then it seems that Mike is gone. Relief. You know, I like to do lots of different things in poetry, not always the same thing. And I'm fascinated by the work of minimalist poets, people like Seiichi Noguchi and Aram Saroyan and Robert Grenier. And so one day, when I was just playing around, I decided I wanted to write a poem with the least number of letters possible, which it turns out is 3 for me. Could be fewer for others, you know, like the Cracker Barrel puzzle. If you can get down to 1 peg, I salute you. This poem has 3 letters, which together make 9 sounds, and that's all of the poem. The poem's title is First Strains, and I sort of semi-lifted that title from another great minimalist, Ronald Johnson, who called his earth songs strains, meaning strains of music, but also strains in the sense that sometimes you kind of have to strain to find the meaning. So this is First Strains. Owl. O owl, low owl, low owl, owl, o owl, oo owl, woo owl, low, low owl, low owl, o owl, o owl, o owl, low owl, o owl. Three letters. Minimalism. Well, this is something that I've been practicing a lot lately. People talk about my long lines. After a while, you get a little bit self-conscious, right? It's like, maybe I'm a one-trick pony. So I've been using very short lines and very small units. And mostly I have kept these poems to myself because they're not... I didn't set out to write good poems. In fact, I really never set out to write good poems. From day one, when I started writing poetry, I just wanted to make fun of poetry. So there's that. I was really thinking about like the kind of poems that would have attracted me to poetry when I was 15 years old, you know, like Catullus and, you know, this like hard, pithy, in and out very quickly. Like I remember loving the poetry of John Raven. Remember John Raven? A roach came strutting across my floor like it was beyond reproach. Or some sexy looking whore. And if I hadn't have snuffed it, if I had kept it alive, I know it would have come right up and slapped me five. Remember that? So, not that I'm going to be that good either. These are called, they're named after a brand of rolling papers. They're called raw papers. Raw papers. Ask the trees what to write, they'll tell you the trees. Ask a kid and he'll tell you how it sucks to be young. Then folks swing on you, just swing on you, and you break. The leather coat. A gay boy loves haiku because he doesn't have to say what it means or where he got it. Try me on for size. These are very short, sorry. Try me on for size. When you're young, you got an ass. When you're old, you got a dog. When you're old, you got a dog's ass. A semi-true story. My Little Crack Pipe. Like My Little Pony. My Little Crack Pipe. The time I thought I'd caught the curtains up and called the fire dept, it was just my sensitive nose deceived by your low-life jimmy jab right where you'd left it. The beefy brigade showed up anyways and axed themselves in. I don't think anyone hooked up a hose. There's a teenager outside throwing up, and I remember you uncut and without a goddamn filter. This was the one poem I wrote in Kentucky. I was there for a month. And the last day that I was there, it was Halloween, I was staying in the woods all by myself, and I thought, I could get scared, or I could write a poem. Those were the two options. This is called All About All Hallows' Eve. We dressed in our best false breasts to impress our two guests. The dudes pressed their dude flesh against our false chests. We undressed, acquiesced, boy flesh on boy flesh in a dress, but undressed. Who'd have guessed such repressed sex progressed to the next, to the best? It was yes, it was best left unquestioned, corrected, or checked. It was sex without question, complex, as the mess on the dress would attest. This is a very San Francisco poem. It's called The Eviction. Didn't come as much surprise. I just thank God that I'm alive. Like the Boys Town gang sang covering Frankie Valley, Hayes Valley, Castro, Eureka Valley, Polk Gulch, all the low places where I went all the way. I'm a ghost now in your old apartment. I bang your boyfriend when you're not home. See, some of them have like a little, this one, you know, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence, they are the leading drag nun order in the United States of America, and probably the longest lasting drag nun contingent in the world. And every Easter as a fundraiser, they do this hunky Jesus contest. People know about the hunky Jesus contest? It's pretty much what you would imagine. These hunky guys dressed like Jesus, carrying crosses up through Dolores Park, and being judged by drag nuns. It It was a big intro. It's a very short poem. It's only three lines. It's like a trinity. Hunky Jesus contest. Some of these guys practice all year with their palms. Do you need it again? No. Some of these guys practice all year with their palms. All right. This is a Republican poem. I mean, that is to say, it was inspired by a Republican administration. I don't remember which one, because it just seems like it was like one big, long block of crooks. I mean, I'm only talking really about the Nixon administration and the Bush administration and the other Bush administration and the Reagan administration. This is called trickle down, like trickle down economics, which is a nice way of saying you ain't got nothing. Trickle down. We were poor when I lived with the whore and the florist, poorest at the end of the month, and the tricks ran out with the roses. Poor, so poor we could stretch an egg or beg at the 10-cent store. The poor are with you always, like the Force in Star Wars. America's poor are taught to not think of themselves as poor, especially not when they're working. And we worked every night until 4, sucking cock, cutting lines, cutting glads. We weren't sad we were poor. We were rich, if you counted in roaches. See, John Raven again. Big influence on me. Nobody knows John Raven. You're going to have to look him up. All right. This is the last of those you'll be glad to hear. It's called Horrors. Horrors, like horror movies. Horrors. One day, you wake with an old man's dick in your hand, and it's your own. See, we're going to be laughing about that because we're like every nasty poem that you imagine making fun of somebody, picture Donald Trump doing it. Yeah. All right. I'm going to read a couple of poems from Useless Landscape or A Guide for Boys. The book started as a kind of imaginary landscape, built on landscapes that I knew, in the same way that 19th century landscape painters would go out and sketch various components of a landscape, and then they would go back into their studio and assemble them into one place. And so most of these places are, in fact, the same place. They are the Central Valley of California, but different aspects of it and different locations. So this is entitled Landscape with Sections of Aqueduct. If the crown of day is not gold, then it's a marvelous fake. Merciful present tense. If the brown grass is always flowing, if the sun is always just brushing the dry hills, and if last summer's suicide is still a loner whose white t-shirt knotted so tight it had to be cut off his neck with a penknife, then evening is the same bare patch and the same fat crows, the crushed aluminum cans and the hamburger wrappers, or the ribbon of tire tread where a road crew hasn't come by. They have taken him away, and I do not know where he is laid. Among the soft cheat and meadow barley, A live oak begs relief from the hardened light, the beating of its own gnarled limbs and the unrelenting rustle of its own beige blooms that tumble together shyly like a locker room of boys, once boisterous, now called to roll and suddenly bashful, clasping at dingy towels. Let the dead be modest. Give the tree, solitary being who feeds on wind and the moat of another's distant beauty, cause to brag. Except that the kernel would fall upon the soil, it abides alone. One guy peeled labels off beer bottles here, another climbed the remaining concrete piles and wrote, Justin loves, wrote, Stephen loves, wrote, hang 'em high, class of 93. Cabbage moths flickered in tansy and clustered broom rape, bore the pain of creation for a little yellow dust, a smear of light on their fidgeting legs and the sudden buoyancy in updraft. Ruin by the wayside, you took as sacrament, you abiding rock. When I lived in that barren part of California, that red voting part of California, the Central Valley, if people asked me where I lived, I would always use the same word, because if I told them what town, then I would have to explain what town that was near, and then what town that was near, and then what town that was near. And that just seemed, you know, too long a way to say, boonies. I live in the boonies. They always knew where that was. So this is boonies. Where we could be boys together, this region of want, the campestral flat, the adolescents roving across the plat, come hither, he of the hard would call me hither. Sheer abdomen, sheer, slick insides, the feldspar buttes that mammalate the valley right where it needs to bust. And I could kiss his tits and he could destroy me on the inflorescent slopes in his darkest dingles, upon the grassland's raffish plates, and he could roll me in coyote brush. I, who was banished to the barren, could come back into his fold, and I would let him lay me down on the cold, cold ground. Clouds above, lenticular, the spreading fundament, a glorious breach among the thunderheads, and in their midst a great white heron magnifies the day. We'd keep together, he and I, and we'd gain meaning from our voyage. We'd pursue each other through the crush of darkling rifts, climb into each other's precipitous combs. Where would it end, this brush and bush, this brome and blazing star? There was always some new way to flex a limb and find its secret droop. Not only the hope of nature, the nature of hope. So long as culverts carry us, so long as we stay ripe to one another's lips and welcoming to hands, as long as we extend our spans to tangle them as spinning insects do their glistered floss. This is not a time to think the trumpet vine is sullen. Rather, the trumpet's bell is but a prelude. It says we all are beautiful at least once. And if you'd watch over me, we can be beautiful again. I'm going to end with a poem. The title is taken from a Frank O'Hara poem, which it's also taken from a Schiller poem. And of course, Beethoven took the poem title for a section of a symphony. So I guess a lot of people want to write about the same thing. This is probably for any of you who spent any time as an adolescent in a rural place, you know what it means to get in your car and drive. This is called Ode to Joy. So many automobiles, it must be Friday night. These are the golden eyes of Catatonia of the Valley of. They are the lights of. Their procession is a thread of yellow ore across one bridge, across another confluence of rivers. The ones that sometimes leave their beds and leave the shambled houses bare. Well, even to belong in this congested state, you have to spend a little bourbon on your nerves. They keep their low beams on. It's part of, a subset of belong. Switching gears to Slaughterhouse Road or Garden Highway or up to the junction or out to the boat ramp at Cottonwood Star Bend. Everyone's a little wet in the V tonight. They're all getting sticky on the bucket seats. In their humid zones, there are humid smells. They stopped for eats. Will everyone be fed this good in heaven? Hey there, cowboy, here's your Whopper. All roads lead first to Burger King, it seems. Or Howell's Grubsteak, home of the Dude Burger. This is one of those dreams that cause sleep eating in which, as we float across a tiny bridge, our bodies, patty and bun, converge, and all we got to do is put the mustard on. The condiments of can't stop your heart. Of intimacy that flourished here, an outlaw, just as the outlaws themselves had flourished in the slapstick gold rush days, and men who came from China without wives, and boys who bundled together in the Oki jalopies, girls finding their way together through the pass, and others leaving Mexico or Vietnam behind, could reinvent the space they occupied. Of teens, as teens must do, eating the potato nuggets of cupidity, scheming them onto that hunting road of dirt whereupon the greatest intimacy of and in and through occurs. Of all the random shots one young man takes, of hit and run trade, the hidden features of men with boogie-woogie on their minds, their cups of ketchup and other dipping sauces creating little O's of transparency in their suck-me-off jeans. Of horrible missteps with fucked-up chums, of low desire, of powerful urges, of release by one's own adulterous hand, of the feeling of somebody else should drive. Push, Push in the Bush is the title of a dance hit, but it's just as easily a country song. Out there, in the dark, they have found each other like lightning bugs, despite the pesticides, despite the blights that hit a town's periphery and stay. There is a luminescence of all things which are of a place, the place where they begin, therefore belong. Thank you.